Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
It's long been said the Democrats eat their own. Tonight, it appears, the feast is imminent. I'm Shepard Smith. This is the news on CNBC.
We are far apart from what they consider far apart.
Democrats divided. Progressives and moderates facing off over infrastructure spending.
Our best interest is served by passing this bill today.
The internal political standoff with the president's entire economic agenda at stake. Policing parents. Growing acts of anger.
You right there, you clown.
Forcing school boards to ask for federal help. Why some are comparing the aggression to domestic terrorism.
Officers.
Facebook playing defense on Capitol Hill. Senators hammering the tech giant over accusations it put profits ahead of kids' safety. The state of Maine leading the charge in making companies pay for their own recycling.
Were faced with this cost that they didn't anticipate.
The groundbreaking new law and the other states that may soon follow. Brain surgery to treat drug addiction. The CDC's urgent message to pregnant women. And the American crocodile fights its way back from the edge of extinction.
Live from CNBC, the facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith.
Well, they have the House, they have the Senate, and they have the presidency. But they also have some very different ideas about how to do things. And the Democrats are in grave danger of getting nothing done at all. The liberals and the moderates of the party are in a standoff that threatens to tank President Biden's entire agenda. Tonight, we're waiting to hear whether Speaker Pelosi pulls the trigger and brings a bipartisan infrastructure bill to the floor for a vote. Right now, her progressives are digging in and vowing to vote no, unless and until they're guaranteed to also get a massive $3.5 trillion social spending package. It includes funding for things like universal pre-K, affordable child care, and much more. Two moderate senators are refusing to budge on that, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They say that price tag is way too high. Today, Senator Manchin said he would agree only to spend $1.5 trillion. That's his max. But it's less than half of what President Biden and the progressives want.
My top line has been 1.5 because I believe in my heart that what we can do and what the needs we have right now and what we can afford to do without basically changing our whole society to an entitlement mentality. I'm willing to come from zero to 1.5.
Yeah. Speaker Pelosi has previously said she will never bring a bill to the floor if it doesn't have the votes to pass. It's 7 o'clock. Nothing on infrastructure. Not yet. Earlier today, Speaker Pelosi struck an optimistic tone.
I think we're in a good place right now. We're making progress. We're on a path to win the vote. I don't want to even consider any options other than that.
Well, the White House says President Biden's priority is to pass both bills. In a moment, we'll go to CNBC's Kayla Tausche live at the White House first. Our senior congressional correspondent, Ilan Moy, is live on the Hill where they are. Well, Ilan, where are they?
Well, Shep, it's either going to be a breakthrough or a breakdown tonight on Capitol Hill. The House is now standing in recess until at least 9 p.m. as Democrats try to figure out if there is a path forward on the infrastructure bill. And Democratic leaders told us they just started whipping or counting the votes today. And when asked if she has enough support to pass this, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said only, "We're working on it." Now, we watched a parade of lawmakers, progressives and moderates going in and out of her office today. They told us the tenor of those conversations was positive, even if there wasn't really any movement. Here's the head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, Pramila Jayapal.
We've been working very closely to make sure she understands where we are, to be transparent. Listen, nobody should be surprised that we are where we are, because we've been telling you that for 3.5 months. We've said the same thing, and we're still in the same place.
Now, her comments came just as new details emerge of exactly where two key moderate Democratic senators stand, Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. Sinema declared point blank that she would not support a bill that costs $3.5 trillion. And she said she's conveyed those red lines directly to President Biden and that she is negotiating in good faith. Meanwhile, Manchin had a whole laundry list of demands, including that $1.5 trillion price tag, a 25% corporate tax rate, and keeping fossil fuel tax credits, something that's sure to be a non-starter among progressives. Now, even amid all of this drama in Washington, D.C., Congress did manage to accomplish one thing, and that is to prevent a government shutdown at midnight tonight. The House and the Senate both passed a bill that would extend government funding through December the 3rd. The president is sure to sign this as well. And importantly, Shep, Republicans and Democrats came together to support this. Back over to you.
Ilan, thanks. The White House says President Biden's working in lockstep with Speaker Pelosi to get it done. Team coverage continues. Senior White House correspondent Kayla Tausche live on the North Lawn. Kayla?
And Shep, the president is still working at this hour in the Oval Office after clearing his schedule for 11th hour talks during what White House officials describe as a precarious moment, scrambling still happening at the staff level, and a shared view among officials that they don't know how this chess game will end. There are two schools of thought. One is that Senator Manchin's demands are old news and that July memo doesn't reflect his current thinking. The second is that Manchin's number hasn't budged, but it could be massaged to get to $2 trillion, depending on whether tax cuts are included in that number. The White House declined to say whether Senator Kyrsten Sinema has shared a similar outline of her exact terms. And while the honeymoon period for President Biden has long been over, this first year is usually seen as the last hope for passing large pieces of legislation before the midterms become a referendum on the presidency. Press Secretary Jen Psaki fielding multiple questions today of why the administration needs to pass these packages now and acknowledge the deadline is self-imposed.
The president knows from his time in public office that timelines can help make progress. That's often how legislating happens on the Hill.
Meanwhile, the deadline for the debt limit is firm. October 18th, the Treasury Secretary says. The White House and Cabinet are trying to shore up Republican votes behind the scenes in hopes additional pressure from trade groups and the stock market could help sway them. But if that effort is fruitless, then they'll move on to Plan B, I'm told, in about a week. The White House says it won't let Republicans off the hook. Republicans say they're happy to let Democrats own that. Shep?
Kayla, thank you. The Republicans are drooling. So where does the president and his party go from here? NBC's Sahil Kapoor on that. Sahil, if this vote on infrastructure fails, or Speaker Pelosi doesn't bring it to the floor because she doesn't have the votes to pass it, what does a path forward look like for Democrats?
Shep, it's a good question. And the first thing to know is that there will be some angry centrist Democrats in the House caucus because they have demanded this vote. It was already delayed from Monday, and they have extracted a promise from Speaker Pelosi that she will do everything she can to rally the votes. That is what we are seeing right now at this hour. She's trying to make good on that promise by pulling out all the stops to get the votes, but she does not appear to have the votes at this point, Shep. They simply aren't there. And unless she is able to pull a miracle tonight, she will have to face two very difficult choices. One is hold the vote and allow it to fail, which Speaker Pelosi never does. I can't think of an instance, or to pull the vote and to live to fight another day. Now, at the end of the day, Shep, the two wings of the Democratic caucus, the progressives and the centrists, they need each other. If this bill fails and the other reconciliation bill fails, it is mutually assured destruction. Centrists go home empty-handed for the 2022 elections, and many of them are in swing districts that are most likely to be washed away if Democrats have nothing to campaign on and if it's a red wave. And progressives, well, if they kill this infrastructure bill and potentially lose the reconciliation option, they lose their best chance in probably a generation to rewrite that social contract to expand the safety net. So My reporting suggests that they will pick up and try to pull it together if this fails, but it's not going to be easy.
You know, to say there's real frustration with Senators Manchin and Sinema is the understatement of the day. And in Sinema's case, you're reporting she may face a primary challenge.
That's right, Shep. There are Arizona Democrats, more on the progressive end, who are already gearing up to launch a primary challenge to Senator Kyrsten Sinema, the centrist Arizona Democrat in 2024. Now, her seat is not up next year. She's got a little bit of time. And they say she should use that time to correct course. They are demanding that she support a robust safety net package, the $3.5 trillion that they point out represents President Biden's agenda. They accuse her of obstructing that agenda at this point. And they also demand that she flip her position on the filibuster, support the abolition of the 60-vote rule in the Senate so Senate Democrats can pass things like gun control and voting rights and some modest immigration reform, which can pass with a simple majority but cannot get a supermajority. There is a petition launched backed by a fundraising drive that's already raised $35,000 at least today, and a separate effort to get Congressman Ruben Gallego, a more progressive Democrat in the House of Representatives, to primary Kyrsten Sinema. I caught up with Gallego earlier today, and he said that is not his focus right now. He wants to get both the infrastructure and the reconciliation bills passed, Chip.
Deadline midnight. Sawhill, thank you. The government issuing its strongest warning yet to pregnant women. An urgent message from the CDC to mothers-to-be, get vaccinated. The science behind this brand new call and what one doctor is seeing on the front lines. Chaos at school board meetings are now deemed a threat. Fearful school officials are turning to President Biden for help. And a Facebook executive gets the grilling of his life on Capitol Hill over Instagram's alleged negative impact on teenage girls. Senators teaming up in a rare bipartisan attack on one of the titans of tech.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
COVID Watch. Encouraging news to report tonight, for once. Cases of the disease fell over the past 2 weeks by 25% nationwide. Johns Hopkins reports we're now averaging still 114,000 infections a day, but it's better. Around 68,000 Americans are still in hospitals sick with COVID, but that's the lowest total in a month and a half. It appears the Delta variant may be starting to loosen its grip on our nation. Health experts say more vaccinations will help drive hospitalizations down even further. And just this week, the CDC issued a new and urgent message to pregnant women, strongly recommending that they get the COVID shot. The agency reports at least 2,200 expecting mothers have been hospitalized with COVID, and more than 160 have died, including 22 just last month. Many pregnant women say they're hesitant to get the shot because they're concerned about how it will affect their babies. Stephanie is a mother-to-be. She asks us not to show her face or use her last name because she's afraid of the backlash against her decision to remain unvaccinated.
I'm not anti-vax. I get the flu vaccines. This one just feels a little different to me. You spend your whole pregnancy doing everything that you can to protect the baby. You can't change cat litter. You can't eat lunch meat. So injecting all these chemicals into your body is a little scary.
CDC data shows fewer than a third of all pregnant women in the United States are fully vaccinated. Dr. Manisha Gandhi is with us now, chief of maternal fetal medicine at Texas Children's Hospital. Doctor, thanks. You've treated pregnant women with COVID. What kind of risk do they face? What are you seeing?
Thanks, Shep. We're just seeing a lot more sicker moms. They're being admitted to the intensive care units. They're having longer admissions in the hospital. They're developing respiratory failure, being placed on a mechanical ventilator. And then we're also having to deliver them prematurely. So they themselves are dealing with complications, but then we have to deliver their baby to improve their health, and that results in the baby having to go to their own intensive care unit.
Doctor, it took the CDC 8 months to strongly recommend the vaccine for pregnant women. Before then, they said it was just okay to get the shot. That delay, did it have an impact on low vaccination rates?
I think at the beginning it may have initially, but I think they were also trying to do their due diligence. Just like Stephanie mentioned, you know, this feels different, but now women can be reassured that there's over 9 months of data that really shows this vaccine to be safe in thousands of women with pregnancies. So although I can understand, if anything, this should really help support women that this is a safe vaccine and they really can be sure that there's nothing being any kind of adverse events to be expected.
Doctor, when an expecting mother comes to you and wants advice and some clarity about the vaccine, what do you tell her?
So I tell her, just like Stephanie mentioned, all the things that you do to protect your baby, this is one of them. This vaccine will not only protect you, but it protects your baby by preventing you from getting sick, preventing a premature delivery, and then also transmitting those antibodies across the placenta that could protect your baby. So to people who worry about putting things in their body, once you get COVID and you're getting really sick, I have to give a lot more medications that have a lot less safety data than this vaccine.
Doctor, in the big picture, the numbers are going down right now, which is fantastic. When you look ahead to the winter, do you think this gets worse, or have we seen the worst already?
That's the million-dollar question. I was really optimistic in the summer when things were dropping down and just really feeling like we were maybe getting ahead of this finally. And then to be dealing with this surge and taking care of really sick women has just really taken a toll, such that even now I like hearing what you said about the numbers, but I'm still really afraid this is just another lull before another potential surge.
I sure hope not. Dr. Manisha Gandhi,
great.
It's good of you to be here. Thank you. The fight over COVID rules in classrooms has hit a fever pitch. Now, a group that represents school boards across the country is asking the federal government to step in. They want help dealing with the threat of violence and intimidation against school officials. The Association reports people have attacked school board members and teachers just for issuing COVID restrictions and mandates. In a letter to President Biden, the head of the group wrote, "America's public schools and its education leaders are under an immediate threat." Here's CNBC's Perry Russum.
In school board meetings across the country, parents have been angry.
I vote to vote them out today.
They've been yelling.
And we should take our kids and we should pull them out of school.
Flipping each other off. This week in Minnesota, parents fighting over a phone, one man's shirt getting ripped open. Police had to be called in.
Officers, please come to the room.
Now the National School Boards Association says they have had enough.
Actual threats in the parking lots and threatening letters, threats over social media, you know, saying things like, we know where you live.
Chip Slavin is the interim executive director of the NSBA, representing more than 90,000 local school board members. They sent a 6-page letter to President Biden asking for federal law enforcement and other assistance to deal with the growing number of threats of violence and acts of intimidation.
When we're fighting over mask policies or over, you know, political issues in schools, that's really getting in the way of providing an excellent education for all children. We've got to get back to that.
The mayhem over masks has been happening for weeks as school leaders decide whether students should cover up. At a Senate committee hearing today, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona called the attacks very dangerous.
I'll tell you, the lack of civility in some of our meetings is disappointing and frustrating, especially because our superintendents and educators and board members, and you should know you're a board member, they've worked tirelessly over the last 18 months to provide a safe environment.
And also in that letter to the president, the NSBA writes, as these acts of malice, violence, and threats against public school officials have increased, the classification of these heinous actions could be the equivalent to a form of domestic terrorism and hate crime, Shep.
Wow, a lot more to come here. What's this I'm hearing about a challenge that students slap teachers?
It is very odd. It's another TikTok challenge. I guess these TikTok challenges aren't going anywhere. It's called Slap a Teacher, but it sounds more like talk than actual action, but still some warnings are going out to parents over the past few days, Shep.
Jesus, what is coming next? Perry, thank you. You know, like a minute ago, it seemed like teenagers everywhere were vaping. Now, not so much. That's according to a new report just out today from the CDC and the FDA. In this national survey, 11% of high school students and less than 3% of middle school students said they were recent users of e-cigs or other vaping products. That's a 40% drop from last year. Now, the decrease is attributed to a number of things. For one, the FDA has a ban on nearly all the flavored vapes. Plus, there's this law that nobody under 21 can buy tobacco products. But maybe it's this. Most teenagers were not in school. They were home, remote learning. This was the first year the information was collected using an online questionnaire. In past years, it was conducted in classrooms. Trash in America. Recycling is more popular than ever, but man, it is expensive. Now, a state is pushing to have the original producers of that garbage help pay to recycle it. And why the idea is catching on. Plus, Elon Musk versus Jeff Bezos. We have a new richest man alive. Who won? And how he plans to celebrate.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Time for some trash talk. America is recycling more than ever before, but it's getting more expensive to do it. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, Americans recycle about 70 million tons of garbage every year. That's nearly the weight of 800 aircraft carriers. But since China stopped buying most of America's scrap 3 years ago, the U.S. has lost $400 million in revenue. Well, now, U.S. cities and towns are struggling under the cost of recycling all that garbage. So one state just passed this new law. It'll shift the burden from the governments to the businesses that are creating the mess. Here's CNBC's Diana Olick.
As the cost of recycling rises, cities and towns are getting crushed.
Our municipalities all of a sudden were faced with this cost that they didn't anticipate, and it really forced them to either abandon or cut back on their recycling programs or raise taxes to keep them going.
Now, Maine's new state law says the companies that produce the garbage must pay to recycle it. It's called Extended Producer Responsibility, or EPR. The producers will pay into a fund that reimburses municipalities.
What that does is creates economic incentives for the producers of packaging to create less packaging, to offer more reusable packaging options, and make what packaging we do have left recyclable.
That means all producers, from Amazon to local Maine businesses. But some of the largest sellers of packaged goods, Maine's grocers, warn that though it sounds simple, it is not.
The unknowns of implementation are the biggest concerns. There's a lot of extra administrative work for the brand owners to determine what type of packaging materials they use, what is the weight of those materials, and then ultimately what is sold back into the main market in which they'll be paying upon.
It could take several years to set rules about not only what types of materials producers have to pay for, but what brands. National brands are clear, but for example, if a store has its own label on a spice and the spice is produced by another distributor, who pays? And in the end, will that added cost hit the retailer regardless?
The retailers are concerned in general about overall inflation rates and price hikes and what that means for the overall cost of goods and what folks are bringing home in their shopping carts.
EPR could increase the consumer's cost of products by up to $134 million a year. Or as much as $60 for a family of four. That's according to a study from Toronto's York University. But some big multinational companies are already on board. More than 150, including Coca-Cola, Unilever, and Walmart, recently signed a pledge saying to solve the packaging waste and pollution crisis, there must be mandatory programs in which all industry players introducing packaging to the market provide funding dedicated to collecting and processing their packaging after its use.
We're the first domino to fall in the United States, but we're really following along in the footsteps of other countries across the world.
Most countries in the European Union, as well as Japan and parts of Canada, already make producers pay to recycle, and they claim it does not trickle down to consumers. The state of Oregon has a similar law going through its legislature, and other states are likely to follow suit. Shep.
And the companies are okay with this, Diana?
Well, they have to be in the state of Maine. Look, of course, there was corporate lobbying against it, but mostly because the companies wanted to have more control over how they paid. They didn't just want to pay into a fund, Shep.
Diana, thank you. U.S. officials preparing for what could be a surge at the border. But brand new tonight, we just got a decision from a judge that could ease their concerns. A Facebook exec on the defense. She got a grilling on Capitol Hill, and it seems the issue is one on which lawmakers from both sides of the aisle can agree. That's next as we approach the bottom of the hour and the top of the news on a very special edition. We'll tell you about that later. Spoiler alert, the lineup for this year's Super Bowl halftime show is stacked. We just got the news today. Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, Kendrick Lamar, all on the same stage. The NFL and Pepsi revealed the lineup this afternoon. Collectively, the artists have won 44 Grammys and produced 22 number one Billboard albums. Dr. Dre says the performance will be an unforgettable cultural moment, and that's a quote. The Super Bowl, scheduled for February the 13th at SoFi Stadium in Inglewood, California. You can watch both the game and that hip-hop halftime show on All Together Now, NBC. The Fed chairman on crypto's future. That's what's stopping CNBC on the money. The Fed chair Jerome Powell testifying before the House Financial Services Committee today with guidance on the future of crypto.
No intention to ban. No intention to ban.
No intention to ban them.
No intention to ban them. The Fed chair's remarks come on the heels of China's sweeping crypto ban. But Chairman Powell did go on to say that it is appropriate to regulate cryptocurrencies. Folger's iconic Best Part of Waking Up jingle is up for auction. The Royalty Exchange accepting bids on the future royalties from the jingle. So what does the winning bid get? Ownership of the songwriter's share of public performance royalties, which means pouring those residuals in your cup, making money every time it's used in a Folgers commercial. And Elon Musk just passed Jeff Bezos again on the list of the world's richest people. So how's he celebrating? Well, Musk says he'll send Bezos a silver medal and a giant statue of the number two. Billionaires. They're so clever. On Wall Street, the Dow down 547, the S&P down 52, NASDAQ down 64. I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour, time for the top of the news.
Fearing an October surge, the startling forecast of hundreds of thousands of migrants crossing the border next month. The FBI back at Brian Laundrie's house. The personal items collected and what the family's lawyers say it's all about. But first, Facebook, an executive grilled by lawmakers on Capitol Hill.
The company's head of global safety addressing accusations in a Senate subcommittee hearing that company knew for years that Instagram causes mental and emotional harm to teenagers.
At Facebook, we take the privacy, safety, and well-being of all those who use our platform very seriously, especially the youngest people on our services. We work tirelessly to put in the right policies, products, and precautions so they have a safe and positive experience.
Well, the hearing prompted by a series of explosive reports from the Wall Street Journal. They revealed internal research from Facebook repeatedly found its Instagram app is toxic for teenage girls. According to one of the company's own reports 2 years ago, one in five teens says Instagram makes them feel worse about themselves. CBC's Julia Borston. Now, Julia, Facebook's pushing back against documents from their own company.
Well, that's right. Facebook's head of security, Antigone Davis, playing defense in the face of accusations that Facebook puts profits ahead of kids' safety, stressing the value that teens get from connecting with friends and family. In a bipartisan attack, a number of senators compared social media to cigarettes.
Facebook is just like big tobacco, pushing a product that they know is harmful to the health of young people, pushing it to them early, all so Facebook can make money. IG stands for Instagram, but it also stands for Instagreed.
Several senators pushed Davis on the company's pause on its development of Instagram for kids. Now, Davis didn't share any details, saying that the company uses research to improve its products. But Senator Blackburn said that Facebook's interests are purely financial.
This seems to be a recurring theme with this company. Do everything and anything to mold the world into your own image for your own profit without any regard for any harm that is going to be done, because your focus is on your pocketbook.
On the eve of the hearing last night, Facebook released the documents at the center of the Wall Street Journal expose. The 93 slides were accompanied by heavy annotation, saying that the research was not intended and does not evaluate causal claims between Instagram and health or well-being. Also saying that it is not accurate to say that this research demonstrates that Instagram is toxic for teen girls. Shep?
Julia, obviously a lot of outrage on the Hill today, but what about actual legislation?
Well, you know, there is an act called the Kids Act. It's from Senators Markey and Blumenthal. It had been introduced last year, and then they just reintroduced it in an effort to figure out ways to make sure that advertising is not overly manipulative, that there are limits to the types of content that you could show to children. And one interesting thing, Shep, is when Senator Markey brought this up to Antigone Davis, she said that her company, Facebook, supports the idea of having more clear-cut legislation of how they should operate.
Julia, thanks. You know, whenever tech executives testify before House and Senate committees, members of Congress are often criticized for not knowing enough about tech companies to come up with the right questions for executives about how they work. Witness this.
Will you commit ending?
No, that's not quite ready yet. In an exchange that went viral between Senator Richard Blumenthal and Facebook's Antigone Davis.
Will you commit to ending Finsta?
Senator, again, let me explain. We don't actually do Finsta. What Finsta refers to is young people setting up accounts where they may want to have more privacy. You refer to it as privacy from their parents. What in my interaction with teens, what I found is that they sometimes like to have an account where they can interact just with a smaller group of friends.
Well, Finsta is one of your Finsta is one of your products or services. We're not talking here about Google or Apple. It's Facebook, correct?
Finsta is slang for a type of account.
Okay, will you end that type of account?
I'm not sure I understand exactly what you're asking.
No one does. In the senator's defense, though, he did say his office had created a fake account in which they pretended to be a 13-year-old girl, and that after following what he called easily findable accounts about body image issues, Instagram began serving up content about eating disorders and self-harm. Breaking just this hour, a D.C. appeals court has ruled that the United States can continue to deport migrant families using a Trump-era COVID policy. That policy is called Title 42, a CDC authority implemented by the Trump administration to deport migrant families seeking asylum to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. Now, a judge had ruled earlier this month that the White House didn't have that authority to keep using Title 42 to expel migrants. And that would have been effective today, except that the court just passed this new order. The ruling comes on the heels of a call this week in which the Department of Homeland Security discussed what would have been or what would have happened had the restrictions been lifted. NBC's Julia Ainsley reporting that Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas asked whether the department was prepared for a worst-case scenario, 350 to 400,000 migrants crossing the border next month. That would have been double the 21-year record set just back in July when more than 200,000 migrants crossed. The ruling in place, while a lawsuit challenging the process goes forward, international aid agency Oxfam reports that if Title 42 does stay in place, it could do serious harm to the global refugee system. Another blow to Haitian migrants trying to escape the social, political, and economic turmoil in their country. They now have very few places to turn. Mexico is now turning Haitian refugees away as well. Officials sent 70 migrants back to Haiti yesterday on what they called an assisted voluntary return flight. They say it's the first group being sent back, part of an agreement between Mexico and Haiti's governments. Just days ago, the U.S. government cleared a border camp in Del Rio, Texas, of thousands of Haitian migrants. As of Monday, the U.S. had sent back 4,000 of them, they tell us, according to the State Department. Today, a look at the situation that migrants face once they actually get back to Haiti. In Port-au-Prince, here's NBC's Jacob Soboroff.
Shep, today here in Port-au-Prince, those U.S. expulsion flights with migrants coming from Texas continue to land at the airport as well as at another airport here in country as well. They're about to approach the total of 6,000 migrants deported over the course of just the last 10 days or so. And just this morning, the U.N. issued a call to the United States and other nations sending Haitians back to this country. And I want to be precise here. They say they call on those nations to refrain from expelling Haitians without proper assessment of their individual protection needs. And that echoes what we heard at the airport yesterday from Giuseppe Laprete, the chief of mission for the United Nations for migration issues here on the ground in Haiti. Many of these migrants are being brought back to a country they haven't been to for years, some as many as a decade, having lived in Brazil, in Chile, and other nations working. And then during COVID, that work dried up, those visas dried up, and they set off to the United States hoping to declare asylum. When they weren't able to get in, of course, the United States started sending many of them back here to Haiti, and in effect, they've become stateless individuals with children born in other nations. The question is now, what becomes of those people on the ground here in Haiti? Many of them we talked with yesterday said that they would consider coming back to the United States, attempting a journey as well. There are reports here on the ground that migration outbound by boat is starting to pick up. We're going to continue to travel this country in order to see the situation on the ground. But the reality here in Port-au-Prince, which is a crime-riddled city, one in which the president of this nation was assassinated just over the course of the recent past, is that it is a very tenuous situation on the ground for migrants. It's a politically tenuous situation for the Biden administration back at home. And most importantly, there is a lot of uncertainty about the future. Shep?
Thanks very much, Jacob Soboroff. An update out of the White House. It's official now. There will not be a government shutdown. The White House says President Biden just signed the short-term funding bill that the Congress passed earlier today. The government is now funded through December the 3rd. Brain surgery to treat substance abuse. It's a revolutionary procedure to try to curb the cravings of drug users. How it works, and meet the first patient to try it. The South Carolina big-time lawyer Alex Murdoch story takes yet another turn. The back-and-forth reports into the actions of the wife just weeks before she was found shot and killed alongside her son. A simple traffic stop in Indiana ends with an incredible drug bust. This is 400 pounds of pot. Police say they pulled over the driver for following too closely. They say he had, get this, green leafy plant material on his trousers that looked like marijuana. Plus, they also smelled the weed, sticky and kind. They arrested the driver and the passenger. And if you're curious what kind of car can hold all of this weed, we were too. Turns out it's a white Dodge Sprinter, a 2021 model, much like this one. That's according to local reporting. Pretty spacious. The manhunt for Brian Laundrie inching forward today. FBI showed up at the Laundrie family doorstep again today. You can see their legs behind the camper there and the photographers running around. They showed up at around 1:30 this afternoon and were seen entering the camper attachment, which has been parked in front of the house for a while now. After about 10 minutes, out they came, leaving with what looked like a small cooler bag. The Laundrie family lawyer telling CNBC that the FBI is in the Laundrie home today to collect some personal items belonging to Brian that will assist the canines in their search for Brian. There is nothing more to this. FBI has had an arrest warrant out on Brian Laundrie for a week now on a charge of fraudulently using a credit card after he went on that cross-country trip with his girlfriend, Gabby Petito, whose death was ruled a homicide. Yet another twist in the South Carolina murder mystery we've been following. People magazine reports Alex Murdoch's wife met with a divorce attorney and was looking into the family's finances just 6 weeks before somebody gunned her down along with one of their sons at the family's hunting lodge. Murdoch's lawyer denied those claims in a statement saying the couple had a loving relationship. Alex Murdoch is the disgraced lawyer accused of hiring a hitman to kill him so that his surviving son could collect millions of dollars in life insurance money. His lawyers say he was hooked on opioids and distraught over the unsolved murders of his wife and son. Police have not identified any suspects or talked at all about a motive of the killings of Maggie and Paul Murdoch. Alex Murdoch's attorney has insisted he did nothing and had nothing to do with their deaths. A former British police officer who kidnapped, raped, and murdered a young woman will die in prison. Today, a judge in London sentenced this man, Wade Cousins, to life in prison without parole. Prosecutors say he abused his power as a serving officer after he falsely arrested Sarah Everard in March. They say he handcuffed her, drove her to a spot outside London, raped and strangled her with his belt before setting her body on fire. The case sparked calls from across the UK for an end to violence against women and girls. Earlier this month, a British government report recommended police treat the issue with the urgency of terrorism. Today, the judge described the details of the case as devastating, tragic, and wholly brutal. He said Everard was a blameless victim of a grotesquely executed series of circumstances. The need for additional ways to treat opioid addictions is urgent. Last year, more than 90,000 Americans died of drug overdoses, and of those, 60% were caused by synthetic opioids like fentanyl. But doctors are hopeful that a cutting-edge new treatment involving brain surgery could help with the problem. Here's NBC's Kate Snow.
This brain surgery could revolutionize the way doctors treat severe substance abuse. It's already changed everything for 35-year-old Jared Buckhalter.
Do you think this device saved your life?
I believe it did.
2 years ago, Jared was the first person in the U.S. ever to have electrodes implanted to stimulate his brain in the hopes of lessening his desire for drugs. A star wide receiver in high school in a small town in Pennsylvania, he was being recruited to play in college. But when that didn't happen, his life took a turn.
I felt that I'd let everybody down, and, you know, that just really put me in a bad spot mentally. And the only thing that I knew to use to cope with that was pain pills.
For years, he spiraled downward.
I had resolved to the fact that he was going to die. He was going to crash a car or OD or something, but something was going to happen.
You drove a lot of people away, right? Mm-hmm. Family, friends.
A lot. Got to the point where I literally had nobody, you know.
When his therapist suggested the experimental surgery, he was scared. But after meeting with Dr. Ali Rezai, he agreed to be the very first. Rezai implanted a kind of brain pacemaker in his chest to send electrical impulses to the reward center deep in his brain.
Our goal is to increase your dopamine slowly using deep brain stimulation so that you don't need to seek drugs to chase after that dopamine.
The electrodes also stimulate the frontal lobe, hoping to encourage better decision-making.
It has to be within a millimeter, right?
Definitely.
We watched in July as they operated on their third patient, James Fisher. They woke him to test the device.
What are you feeling? Any change you're noticing overall for you?
have here.
So this is where you're living now?
Yep.
4 weeks later, we met James at his sober living house in Morgantown, the very same place Jared now works.
I'm coming up on 2 years of continuous sobriety.
Both men say the surgery was the tool they needed to commit to recovery.
It's like somebody covered you up with a warm blanket, you know, and just the feeling of everything's okay. I used to have a really hard time making decisions.
You feel more clear now?
Yeah.
Has it changed you?
So it has. In every aspect of my life, it has changed me for the better.
Has it made it easier to stay sober?
It's made it much easier.
Both have strong family support.
What has it been like for you? Like Christmas every day?
That was the way I described it. It's Christmas every day.
Do you think what you've gone through actually shows that addiction is something in part physical, physiological?
Sure. It is definitely a brain disease, and I think that this only proves that.
He's proud that he's repaired relationships.
I became a much better son, you know, brother, uncle, friend. I think that I'm finally the person that all of them hoped I would be.
It's still early. Dr. Rezai says they're not advocating for this to be used on every patient who has substance use disorder, but for those with severe situations who've been battling this for years, it does hold potentially some promise. Dr. Rezai plans to perform the surgery on a fourth person this fall, and then using all that data, ask the FDA if they can get approval for a larger controlled study. Shep?
Fantastic. Kate, thanks so much. Lava again. But this time, it's bubbling up from Kilauea in Hawaii. And while the eruption is confined to the crater, there is still a danger to the people nearby. Everybody loves a comeback story. In this case, it's the American crocodile crawling its way back to survival and humans giving it a helping hand. Carrie Sanders with a success story from the animal kingdom. And big, big, big news for you fast food fans. Look at this. One of the most active volcanoes on Earth is erupting on Hawaii's Big Island. And as you can see, lava shooting out from the Kilauea volcano. No homes under threat since the molten rocks contained within the crater. But officials are warning people that the gases from the volcano could be really dangerous. Last major eruption was back in 2018 when lava destroyed more than 700 homes and displaced thousands of residents. Kilauea has now erupted more than 30 times since 1952. As we told you yesterday, the United States Fish and Wildlife Service has declared 23 species extinct, 11 different types of birds, one bat, 8 mussels, 3 species of fish, all gone forever. For all 23 animals, wildlife officials say we have humans to thank for their demise. But in some rare cases, humans can help bring species back from the brink. Here's NBC's Carrie Sanders.
Gone forever. The ivory-billed woodpecker, last photographed in 1935, now considered extinct. In some cases, the 23 animals and plants on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife list have so quietly disappeared, few realized they'd be gone forever. Hawaii's Kauai O'o, last seen in 1987. But amid the troubling news, also some hope. Other species making a comeback against the odds, like the Florida panther. 4 decades ago, there were only 20 of these big cats left. Now, there are an estimated 200. To see what biologists say is perhaps one of the biggest success stories, we had to get on an airboat and navigate this extensive canal system in remote South Florida. The closed loop of waterways is used for the millions of gallons that flow every hour to cool the Florida Power and Light nuclear plant. Digging out the man-made canals resulted in 10 square miles of long, skinny islands,
berms of earth that the nearly extinct American crocodile found were an ideal elevated spot to lay and hatch their eggs.
When did you realize that one could actually benefit the other? The power plant could actually benefit the crocodiles?
So this actually happened by accident. The start of the program was in 1978 after the accidental discovery of a crocodile nest.
And that's a happy accident.
That's a happy accident. That's right.
In the 1970s, only about 100 American crocodiles were left in the U.S. Not to be confused with the alligator, the American crocodile now numbers more than 2,000.
So this is an actual American croc nest.
The return of the American crocodile, in large part because of these islands. Still, climate change is a concern. In one of Mother Nature's inexplicable twists, biologists have noted that as temperatures rise, crocs lay far more male eggs, much fewer female eggs.
So if the temperature can impact the gender, as it gets warmer, you could have an imbalance?
Sure, it's a definite possibility.
Is that a concern to you as a biologist?
Definitely.
Again, biologists cannot say why, but they've noticed crocs now looking for cooler areas to lay their eggs, what may be an innate way, if temperatures don't keep climbing, to keep the genders balanced.
For the news, I'm Kerry Sanders, Fort Lauderdale.
Well, McDonald's has answered all our prayers again. Prepare yourself for a gastronomical delight. The news on CNBC can confirm McRib is coming McBack to every McDonald's across every McTown all across McMerica. So you can rejoice and be glad in it. One soft sliced homestyle bun over and under a processed pig product that's been dipped in reddish brown barbecue-y stuff and topped with not just slivered onions, but also tart dill pickles. It comes in a box for easy handling. This is special because unlike burgers and fries that are always on the menu, sometimes McRib refuses to grace us with its greatness. The delicacy to be delivered beginning the day after Halloween, a tricked out treat for families far and wide. Thank you, McRib, for a limited time only. 60 seconds left on a race to the finish. President Biden's agenda in jeopardy. We're waiting to see if Speaker Nancy Pelosi brings an infrastructure bill to the floor or for a vote tonight. Progressives are vowing to block it unless they're guaranteed to also get a $3.5 trillion spending package. And now, you know the news. Of this Thursday, September the 30th, 2021, 1 year to the day since the news on CNBC delivered. Happy anniversary. Launching during COVID was a challenge, but the mission was set in stone. Deliver the news in context and with perspective, harnessing all the power of NBC Universal's reporting and leaving opinion to others. We've stuck to it, and I'm enormously proud of our team and thankful to our company. We're growing, spreading our reach, and we're thankful to you for trusting us. See you tomorrow. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.